This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Chris Hayes was only 34 years old when MSNBC took his show to primetime, making him the youngest primetime host on a major cable news channel. In the 5 years since it went daily, Chris Hayes also found time to launch a podcast and to write a book about racial inequality in America called A Colony in a Nation. All In with Chris Hayes deals with deep and even wonky discussions of politics and policy. And like his colleague Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes doesn't make any pretense whatsoever of objectivity. He's a sharp critic of the president and almost all of what he does. But Hayes is also willing, more than willing, to get personal in how he talks about covering the news. And he spoke in 2018 with The New Yorker's Andrew Marantz about the toll of producing a daily news show in the era of Donald Trump.
The nature of the job that I have right now and the nature of the news right now means that you're constantly locked in this this weird kind of it's like a digital roller coaster or something, or like an amusement park ride, where like you're constantly getting sensory input and having sensory and somatic responses to it, which is also part of what makes it weird. Like I care about the outcomes in the news, so when things happen that are bad, I feel bad. And that emotional response is just part of a whole variety of responses that are intellectual and professional and journalistic.
And there is, by the way, not to stop you, but there is a school of journalism that says you're not supposed to feel good or bad about what happens.
Right, and I sort of envy people that are in that position at some level, because I think it would be less emotionally draining. It feels sometimes like the adrenal system of the body is going all the time. And I also worry that that's like slowly eating away my ability to think. Mm-hmm. Like, I definitely think I'm getting stupider. I think maybe we're all getting stupider, yeah. Despite my very, very large brain.
That's the kind of thing where you're like, is it good for me that I saw that? And I have that clip.
No, that's unambiguously a good thing. I played that for people over breakfast this morning. Yeah. I was like, you gotta see this one. My job requires me to be in the thick of the news cycle. Yeah. And at one level, I meet people all the time who are like, it must be so amazing to be at the center of this remarkable moment. And I say, yes, it is. And it's a tremendous privilege to do the job I do and get to talk to the people I talk to and try to have and also, frankly, just from a personal and selfish perspective, like have an outlet for it. I think I would be going crazy if I was like sitting in a law firm somewhere just like refreshing Twitter. Like, like yeah. I can like go on air and say like, this, you know, we shouldn't kidnap kids. Right. But it's one of these things where I'm racked continuously all day, every day, through the day, in the run-up to the show, during the show, and after the show with self-doubt about my approach.
In what sense?
I just feel like we're screwing up all the time.
Like, in what ways? Like,
there is some way in which the entire attentional universe is now orbiting around this one figure, and all he cares about is the attention. And it sometimes feels like we are collaborators against our will in a kind of project that emanates from just about the most deeply broken place in a human being I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Just something where really profoundly, like when you dig past and you think about it in a sort of spiritual or like human sense, like there's some very deep broken need for the need to impose attention on oneself to the entire universe. Mm-hmm. And that basically that he kicks the ball and we all run after it.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, so, you know, to acknowledge that, you know, two white guys with glasses are talking about
the, it's the glasses really that does it.
I know. Do you, to acknowledge that, but also the question being, you know, you have a TV show. Do you ever, and I assume you won't take this the wrong way, but do you ever feel like in this moment, now more than ever, blah, 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 I feel weird being a white guy taking up space on TV?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that, in our case, my words are not a majority of the show. Mm-hmm. And so that's why guesting is incredibly important to us. And particularly, I mean, we are really extremely focused on that in guesting. Diversity, and, you know, people that aren't heard of all the time.
You keep track of it.
Oh, yeah, very closely. Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that we talk about in the meeting, the daily meeting. It's something that I will occasionally audit. I'll have an intern just go through and make a spreadsheet to see how we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. Well,
Spreadsheets.
Yeah. Spreadsheets and glasses.
The New Yorker Festival.
Yeah. The New Yorker Festival. I think about it a lot. I do think about taking up space as a straight white man with a lot of advantages and privilege in my life. And if you have relative amounts of power and social capital, then like it is simply your moral duty to both use the imaginative gifts that evolution has provided us with, to imagine yourself in other people's shoes, and to act to their benefit as a basic compulsion of justice.
There is a, yeah. I justice got more applause than spreadsheets, which I'm happy about. I went to a Vipassana meditation retreat once where they...
Like a silent one? Like
yeah, 10-day silent.
You did 10 days?
I did two of them. It was, yeah. It's hard and shitty in a lot of ways, but I would recommend it. But the reason I was not planning to bring that up, except to say that there's a question about empathy in this. I'm not like, you know, dogmatic about Buddhism, but I found this really interesting that there was a question of empathy and loving kindness and how squishy does it get? And the teacher said, I forget what the example was, but it was like, if you see someone about to get hit by a train, you push that person out of the way. So it's not like pushing is a thing you don't do. But you try not to do it out of hatred.
Right.
So it's not like...
Right, that's great, that's good.
So it's like...
I'm gonna steal that.
If right, it's a good one, because it's like, if a very powerful person is in charge of an apparatus that is putting children in cages, you don't have to not interrupt her during dinner, necessarily.
Ding, 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 ding. But, you have to view her as a human being.
Right.
Like exactly. Right. Like, to me, that's that there's a difference between, like, civility and humanity. Like, mm-hmm. I actually thought that in the case of Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the dinner was like the perfect example, right? Where it was like the owner like has a conversation with her kitchen staff, some of whom are like, this is in the midst of the child separation thing. And she comes out, she comps her cheese plate, and she asks her politely to leave. And
civilly.
It's like, she civilly, that's a civil action that is like, to my mind, a totally just one, particularly in the frenzy of what that was. I mean, at that time there were 2,000 kids who'd been stolen from their parents, and I think that's a great example of that practice. Like, she didn't treat her like a, you know, she didn't punch her and she didn't spit on her, and she, you know, but she made her action clear from a moral perspective as a human being to another human being who's responsible for what they do. And part of what we're seeing with the Kavanaugh hearing is just the danger in all this, right? Is that empathy is used by the powerful towards the powerful.
Right.
Why do you feel sorry for him and not me? Like, watching those Republican men after man after man after man say, like, I am so sorry for you, Brett Kavanaugh, for what you are going through and the pain on your face and how horrible it's been for you, after they've watched this woman bare her soul about this trauma she experienced, and just it was like all there. And they were being, again, like, yes, it's been a horrible few weeks for Brett Kavanaugh in many ways. And, like, I understand they, but again, it was like, who gets empathy and who doesn't? Those men sitting up there are imagining a world in which they're not imagining the world because they're not doing the practice of being a 15-year-old girl who's scared at the moment that a hand comes over your mouth and the music goes up and you think something horrible and life-changing is about to happen and is happening because they don't do the work to think about putting themselves in that position. What they do think about and what is accessible to them is the idea of being accused, of being a wealthy and powerful, not wealthy, a powerful man on the precipice of the moment, on the threshold of the thing, and having it all stolen from you because someone accuses you. And that they can relate to.
Very transparently what the president can relate to. I mean, and he's not hiding it.
No.
How do you know how long to do the show? Like, how do you know when you, like...
Definitely not forever. To me, there's like a learning curve question about how long I feel like I'm still getting better at it and when I am not. There's lots of different things I want to do with my adult career. There's lots of different interests I have. There's lots of different mediums I like. There's lots of different ways I want to say what I have to say that are not a nightly cable news show. And so I think there's a lot of other stuff that I will do. I'm going to be there for the near future, certainly through 2020, but I will not do it forever. Would have been messed up if you guys applauded.
Chris Hayes.
That's The New Yorker's Andrew Marantz talking with Chris Hayes of MSNBC.